You're in tune to WGXC, 90.7 FM Acra, hands-on radio. I'm Cheryl Kay, host of The Jazz Disturbance. Jazz pianist, composer, arranger, and educator Marcus Roberts is the Catskill Jazz Factory 2014 Artist-in-Residence. He, his band, bassist Rodney Jordan and drummer Jason Marsalis, and musicians participating in this year's residency will be involved in the Joy of Jazz Week, special jazz performances, events, lectures, workshops, and late-night jam sessions at various venues throughout the Hudson Valley of New York, Wednesday, August 6th through Saturday, August 9th. Thank you, Marcus, for joining us at WGXC.
My pleasure.
This is your second year associated with the Catskill Jazz Factory's 23 Arts Initiative. Is that correct?
It is. Yeah, this is my second year being involved. I came August of last year and had a great time. So, we decided to do it again.
Yeah. How did you connect with them?
Well, I met the founder of it through a piano protege of mine, Aaron Deal, who I've known Aaron since he was 16 or 17. And he and Pierce really started the Catskill Jazz Factory, and Aaron put a whole lot of time and effort and work into working on the events that they did for 1 year. And then he asked me last year, the second year that he did it, he asked me to come sort of as the elder statesman, if you will, to kind of balance the other younger bands that he had put together. And we just had a great time. He's just a brilliant young guy, great composer, fantastic pianist. I mean, he's probably practicing right now. Very serious, dedicated young man to the music. And he introduced me to Pierce, and after last year, we just decided that we would do something else. And so this year, it's a similar agenda. You know, what we're interested in is having different generations interact, different generations communicate and contribute to each other's development. That's the main goal. We want everybody to feel comfortable and at home, but the biggest thing we want is for jazz musicians to have more influence on each other and to get a chance to hear each other play, because that's really how the music evolves. That's really how it develops. Historically, that's been what it took, is for guys to just get together, play, organize music, organize events, and then bring the people into it in a way where there's a real organic relationship between what the musicians are feeling and hearing and what the public gets to hear and the feedback that you get from the people for what you're up to, for what you're doing.
Give us a rundown of next week's schedule for you and your band and the students.
Oh my, it's a lot. I don't know if I can give it all to you off the top of my head. I mean, basically what we have rehearsals. We've got three different groups coming in, and everybody will be rehearsing for various events and concerts and presentations that will be going on throughout the week. There will be three jam sessions, I know, official jam sessions that will take place. Rodney's leading one, my bassist and my trio. Ron Westray, great trombonist that I've known for years and years, he'll run one. And then Jason Marsalis, my drummer, will run the third one. And so that'll be an opportunity for all of the musicians to get together and just play, hear each other, like in a more, you know, less formal environment where we can play what we call standards, which are tunes that everybody knows, everybody throughout the history of the music has played. And so we get together, we hear each other, and then there'll be an audience there. So it'll be, like I say, a good interaction there. We have a few other events going on. There's one event that we're doing for classical musicians who will come in, who have an interest in how jazz works, and we'll do an event for them explaining, you know, some basic historical facts about jazz, where it came from and how it works and what different styles of jazz sound like. And we've got a concert on Friday involving the alumni bands that have been there before, and they will present a very good presentation and concert. And we'll do the marquee event on Saturday night, and we'll be celebrating Louis Armstrong with the spirit of Louis, and it'll mainly feature Louis Armstrong and Jelly Roll Morton and maybe a couple other composers, I'm not sure yet, but it'll be, the theme of it is Pops, because he was our first and most important improviser. I mean, he's the one who really put the sound of jazz out there in a way that was mainstream, where people could understand. And his influence, my goodness, it just goes through every genre of American music.
Yeah, so it truly is a Joy of Jazz week next week.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's gonna be busy every single day. Whole lots of things, and there's stuff I left out. Like I say, it's a whole lot going on.
Mm-hmm. You began playing piano at the age of 5, got your first piano at age 8, and started piano lessons at age 12. Do you feel that your young students are as musically prepared and grounded as you were at their age?
I think so. You know, every generation's different. Every musician's different. This generation has the benefit of technology. They're able to, you know, you could type Louis Armstrong into Google or into YouTube, and I mean, you're going to find, like, literally hundreds of videos, recordings that you can listen to for free. When I came up, I mean, you had to buy the record or you had to go to a library and physically sit there and listen to it. So there are pros and cons, I think, to both approaches. Since we really couldn't afford a whole lot of records, the records you bought, you listened to them over and over and over, and they probably settled in your system a bit more than if you type a name into YouTube and you can literally listen to, like, 40 different recordings. For a young person, I think it can be a little overwhelming. So the challenge with young people is to just settle them down and say, okay, well, why don't we pick one recording that we're going to really check out and see if we can, you know, gain some insight and inspiration and knowledge about how to use what's on this recording so that you can bring out your personality and your approach more. So I wouldn't say that they are less serious at all. In some cases, they might be more serious because there are more young people who want to play jazz than when I came up. When I came up, it was a struggle to find people who wanted to rehearse or people who wanted to play.
Now, that's surprising. Very surprising.
Now, I mean, there are lots of really talented, decent young men and women who are really, for whatever reason, they're very interested in playing jazz music. Our problem, though, is we don't have enough opportunities for them to work and to develop. So that's, you know, that's one of the goals of our residency, is not just to talk about music and how to work through the music, but also to talk about ways that we as jazz musicians can support each other and help to create more playing opportunities and educational opportunities so that everybody can work more. And it's, I'll be honest with you, you know, it's a challenge. You know, we're not going to solve it in a week, but, I mean, at least we can start the conversation and we can perhaps think of some things that over time will enrich everybody's ability to solve that problem.
Let me quote you. Music is a lifelong quest, and you have to try to get better every time you play your music, your instrument. How do you conceptualize this to your young students? Meaning, do you feel that you have to water it down so that they can understand it, or do you feel that if they're serious, they'll grow into understanding it?
Yeah, I think they'll grow into understanding it. I don't think you can water down something as profound as jazz music any more than you can really water down Shakespeare. I mean, it's profound stuff. You grow into it. Now, you can find, perhaps, simpler ways to explain things and express things. And your challenge when you're dealing with young musicians is to find a way that suits their personality and allows them to understand it maybe in a different way than how you understood it when you first figured it out. I mean, that's the challenge with teaching. I mean, every student's different. Every student has his or her way that information makes sense to them. Now, there's certain things that are just what they are. You know what I mean? If you're teaching somebody a G major scale, I mean, it's the only certain notes that make a G major scale. You can't really add or subtract from that. So the theory of music is what it is. That's like the math of it. Now, the emotional component, or how you communicate that, and, you know, once you start getting into styles and approaches to styles and a sound of a given composer or a jazz artist, there's some subjectivity that's involved that can give you some flexibility in how you teach a person about it. But pretty much, my approach to music has always been one way, and that's to be very thorough with it and to make sure that a young person working on it, I mean, that's why I like to work with them in groups, because if you play in a group, you have the responsibility of playing your role individually, but you also have to listen very carefully to what's going on around you. You have to listen to what the other musicians are trying to do and make room for them to sound good, too. So there are great lessons in terms of balancing freedom and responsibility and your right to express yourself with the right of somebody else to do the same thing, which ultimately help us just as far as being good citizens of the country that we're in. Those concepts and those principles carry right over into everyday life.
Your experiences in education, are they what prompted you, drummer Jason Marsalis and bassist Rodney Jordan, your current bandmates, to create the Modern Jazz Generation in 2013?
I think so. I think its creation is primarily based on working with a lot of the young people who will be there, because there's something very inspirational about seeing the music being passed on to the next generation and to see such a genuine excitement in these young folks. You know, their desire to play and their honesty and wanting to get as much information as they can get and their gratitude and excitement about being able to play for the public, it keeps people in my generation from becoming jaded, because when you reach, if you've been out here playing for 20 or 30 years, a lot of guys I came out with, it's not that they're jaded per se, but they certainly can get stuck in their ways. So they're not necessarily open to new ways of doing things. They kind of want to, you know, they got questions like, well, how long are we going to need to rehearse this? You know, what's the money going to be? What, you know, just very basic bottom line things, because mm-hmm. they've been out here a long time.
Right.
So that's why I like to surround myself with young people who want to learn and who are interested in doing all the work that's required. And it takes them a while to learn how to play, but there is something for me that is more meaningful a lot of times working with them than if I only stuck with folks my own age. Now, the advantage, of course, in working with people your own age is you know them, and they can play. So that's why in this band we have a balance. So we got some older people, some folks that are in between, and then we got the young guys. So that is why we created the group, the Modern Jazz Generation. It has to do with mentorship among generations of jazz musicians.
You haven't had much of a break from recording since 1988's The Truth Is Spoken Here as a leader, co-leader, and sideman. After recording for BMG Novus, Columbia, and Sony Classical Records, you started your own record label, J Master Records, in 2009. Two questions. Why, and how are you involved?
Well, I started the record label because of the changes that happened in the recording business, which started really in the 90s, but as we all know, we live in a totally different environment now. The traditional record contract and the traditional things that record companies used to do, I mean, they just don't have the resources to do it anymore, because at the point where music became available via the internet, first thing that did was it took the profit margin way down. Because people can get a lot of this stuff now for free. They can type it into YouTube, they can go to Spotify, or they can go to Pandora, and they can listen to pretty much whatever they want, whenever they want. So the whole idea of putting on a CD, it doesn't have quite the magic it had in the 80s, 70s, 80s, and even early 90s. The other issue for me is having control of your content. So when you're with a major record label, don't get me wrong, they do a whole lot of things that a musician never thinks about in terms of getting licenses in order for you to record music, and, you know, a lot of things in terms of advertising, publicity, distribution. You know, these are things that record labels used to do. But they also had complete control of your catalog, and they controlled what you could and couldn't record and when you could record it. And so somebody like myself, I don't really want to be controlled in that way. I mean, as a free artist, I really want to be able to put out what I want to put out, when I want to put it out, without any restrictions. And so that's why I did it. Now, that being said, there's a whole lot to doing that, because you got to find a place to record the music, you got to rehearse the music, you got to figure out what the music's going to be, and then you got to pay for the artwork, and you've got to distribute it yourself, and so it's, again, it's freedom, but again, it's going to be balanced with the responsibility of paying for it and, getting it out there. So I think, we all have a long way to go with it. I think in every genre of music, sales for recordings are down for the reasons I mentioned earlier. People can get these things through subscriptions to streaming websites. They can listen to pretty much whatever they want. So what it is now come down to is your audience now is going to be developed strictly based on who's really interested in your music. And if you can make that music available to them, if you can give them enough of a range of options and choices, then they can decide for themselves what of your catalog makes sense for them. So that's what I'm interested in developing, is a portfolio of options, and the people who are my fans can decide, well, you know what, I like solo piano, so he's got a solo piano record, I think I'll check that out. Some people want to hear standards, but we got records with standards. Some people love more abstract original music, so we have that. So it's really just a matter of trying to find something that will fit the taste of different segments of your audience.
The Marcus Roberts Trio is scheduled to be in Japan later in August. What's happening in Japan for you? It sounds exciting.
Well, it is very exciting. What's happening in Japan is there's a great conductor named Seiji Ozawa, who I've known now since 1996, and we worked together at Tanglewood back when he was conducting the Boston Symphony Orchestra, and we met and performed Rhapsody in Blue there and had a great time and just hit it off, and we have just worked together whenever we could ever since. He's brought me over to Japan several times, and he is truly the greatest conductor that I have worked with, for sure. And,
wow.
And he's functioned really as a mentor to me. I mean, he watching how he handles things and the way he leaves nothing to chance. When you work for him, everything is pretty much perfect, whatever you need. And his demands of his orchestra and everybody involved in anything he does is top-notch, world-class. And so I just learned a whole lot about how you do, the correct way to do things. And so when I'm around him, it's just a good feeling because I know he's in charge. He knows what we should do. And then what I bring to him, I think, is just a way for him to participate in the jazz environment through classical music, which he's always had a deep interest in. You know, he's always been a forward-thinking kind of guy.
Yeah.
And so he's been good for classical music and jazz.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, congratulations on your honorary doctorate from Juilliard in May.
Oh, thank you. that was quite an honor. That was quite an event. They had a whole bunch of really talented people in different fields that were also being honored. Mm-hmm. So I felt very very privileged and honored to receive that in such illustrious company.
Yeah. Maybe we should be addressing you as Dr. Roberts now, yes?
Well, no, I mean, that's fine. I mean, that makes me feel even older than I am. but it was really a very special award, and certainly from the top conservatory in the United States and certainly the best piano school in the United States. So as a pianist, it also had a special ring that way for me as well.
You have been called the genius of the modern piano by your former employer and colleague, trumpeter Wynton Marsalis, who's the artistic director at Jazz at Lincoln Center in New York City. How do you feel you've contributed to the evolution of the modern piano in performance, arranging, and composing?
My biggest interest as a pianist is to showcase the instrument in as many environments and in as many creative ways as I can. So I love to play alone, solo piano. We have a rich history of solo piano that we can draw from. I have a trio, and we've been working together, Jason and I, since 1994, so my goodness, it'll be 20 years in November.
Mm.
And so we've developed a trio philosophy where the piano certainly has a huge role, but the bass and drums have an equal role. I mean, they're not just backing me up. They're not just side people. So it becomes much more of a unified conception that's based on equality. And then with the bigger groups I have, the piano, the role changes yet again. You know, when you have like a 10-piece group, 12-piece group, now we have a bigger band, so the piano starts to function more in terms of color and rhythm section. And what we're working on with the bigger group is to still have the same flexibility as a trio, but now inside of a group that features a lot of other people. So we all share that space very carefully. And then, of course, the piano with orchestra, you know, it has a long history in Europe, and, you know, so we do Rhapsody in Blue and Concerto in F, and even a piece by James P. Johnson called Yamacra that featured piano that Fats Waller debuted in 1927, James P. Johnson piece. And then I wrote my own piano concerto last year, which I did for the Atlanta Symphony. So the biggest thing, piano has such a prestigious history. You know, it's such a great instrument. I mean, I still feel like I'm very much always like I have just as much to learn as I feel I know. In other words, it's, you know, I never feel like I've got it all figured out. So it's an instrument that has kept me busy my entire life. And I guess, you know, when I get near the end of my life, I'll still feel like there's so much more I want to learn about it and present with it. So that's always my goal, is just to put the piano out there in as many ways as I can.
Well, I think the most important question that I'm going to ask you in this interview is about next Thursday, August 7th, because that's your birthday.
It is, indeed
it
is.
It is your birthday, and how do you intend to celebrate?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think I'm going to be working most of it, but I think there'll be a point where, you know, we'll kind of wind down and, you know, maybe have a little dinner and celebrate it, probably through music. I'll probably get a chance to hear some real impromptu jamming going on and might have a few toasts around. I mean, it's going to be great because, you know, I do really cherish the relationships that I've developed with a lot of the musicians, and, you know, we all get along so well. So I just think we'll just end up having, like, a nice, fun, relaxed evening, you know, after we get through with the work we have to do during the day.
Well, truly, every release you put out, every performance that people attend is a celebration. So pre-happy birthday wishes to you, Marcus Roberts.
Well, thank you so much. It's a pleasure. We're looking forward to coming to Tannersville and sharing, you know, all the great events and the good energy that we feel. You know, the people, when they come to the concerts, they do seem to have such a good time, and they bring their kids and other young people, and, you know, they bus kids in from high school. You know, it's really, I think, a great community effort to get everyone involved in culture there. So we're really looking forward to it.
Great. Thank you so much. This concludes my interview with pianist Marcus Roberts. The Joy of Jazz Week is from Wednesday, August 6th through Saturday, August 9th. For more information on the Joy of Jazz Week, CatskillJazzFactory.org. For more information on Marcus Roberts, MarcusRoberts.com.